Let's face it, we're all walking on broken glass these days. It's the only way to get around as we're into the second half of 2020 with July 1st. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic, Trey Wingo here. So, Mike, if we are indeed starting the second half of 2020
with July 1st,
we need a really good halftime speech.
Yeah.
Because the first half of 2020, not great, Bob.
Boy, what a great question. Who would you want to give your halftime speech?
Herm! Absolutely. Road Dogg, I know you're listening. If you're up, we need a halftime speech for 2020.
We need
Where are you at, Herm Edwards? Halftime speech
for 2020. At Golic and Wingo, who would you want to give your halftime speech that could help us somehow have a positive feeling going into the second half of this
god-awful
year.
Rally the realm. We need some of that.
We need
great question at Golic and Wingo, right? By the way, we have a good one up there already.
Right, right.
They're going into the bubble. We put up nine things. You can only pick three. Check
right.
it out
what
at Golic and Wingo, what
right.
you want to do. Also, at Golic and Wingo, someone, you need someone to give you the speech to get you through the second half of this god-awful year. And, oh, by the way, it's only going to get worse because the election ads are coming. So we got to find a way to navigate through this mess that's been 2020. Who do you want to give that speech to you? We want to hear from you at Golic and Wingo on that one.
And we're starting off the new year talking about the test, a lot more positive tests and spikes around the country as sports get ready to open up. And then there's always these great tweets to get us going.
Yeah.
Somebody tweets in, LOL, no athletes will even be hospitalized. Virus is weak.
Okay. Is that a numbered account with an egg?
No.
Come on, guys.
I mean, cool. Oh, yeah, there is numbers.
Yeah, it's cool that you know that. So I'm assuming from your Twitter profile, you're an infectious disease expert, right? It is amazing the number of people on Facebook or Twitter that know more than the
actual people who
study this stuff for a living.
Incredible.
I mean, kudos to you guys. You are solving the world's problems.
They are incredible.
One egg at a time.
But here we are. So July 1st, not only Bobby Bonilla Day, which will explain why he gets $1.2 million every July 1st until 2035. It's also the day that Major League Baseball players report to their respective facilities in their home cities.
Spring training part two.
And we're going to see the NBA players starting to get to their facilities more, though in Denver they've actually closed down their facility because a few people of the 35-person traveling party have tested positive for COVID, so they've closed their facility down. But players starting to congregate there more because between July 7th, 8th, and 9th, so next week, teams will go in groups down to Orlando to go through the process of getting in that bubble, starting then their own training camps there before we get that July 30th restart to the season.
Right. And again, baseball is, again, it's perfect irony for me or coincidence or just it makes all the sense in the world that on Bobby Bonilla Day, baseball starting again. Again, just a quick history lesson. Bobby Bonilla was owed $5.9 million from the Mets. They decided to defer that
money.
This
was in 99 when he finished playing for the Mets. He was owed that money.
So they decided to defer because they want to invest money with this ingenious investor who is making tons of money. His name was Bernie Madoff. He's now in jail. He ran the largest Ponzi scheme in the history of the country, which is basically you're not getting any money. I'm just taking money from one person to pay it to another person to look like there's actual profits being made, and he stole billions of dollars. So the Mets and the Wilpons gave a lot of that money to him, and they wanted to do that, so they decided to pay Bonilla's money prorated over a long time, but Bonilla's agent negotiated an 8% interest increase, so that $5.9 million they owed him spread out over 2011 to 2035, which is, 15 years, at $1.2 million annually is basically $30 million.
Try your math again.
No?
11 and 15 is
25,
yeah,
sorry.
Not 50.
Sorry,
you cost him over about $11
million. So it's $50 million. but I mean, think about it. Just by saying with the interest, I was going to make six. How about I make 50?
I mean, it's unbelievable.
Kudos to you.
So that payment, started in 2011, goes to 2035. So he's probably the happiest person every July 1st. And so baseball, they start to congregate today. At their facilities, though some facilities are doing much better than others.
Right, and Bobby Bonilla getting paid on July 1st is a Stats Incredible, and Stats Incredible is brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. So we have baseball trying to begin, and we have the NBA trying to begin the finish,
right,
for lack of a better term, as the facilities are opening up. And July 7th, 8th, and 9th, they'll head down to Orlando to begin the bubble experience. We talked to Malika Andrews, who is in the pre-bubble phase right now, our fine ESPN Intrepid reporter, as she's getting through the process of entering the bubble. But we're in this bubble because of the pandemic, and there's still the possibility that it could all go haywire. Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, was asked earlier on Time 100, a conversation with the magazine, is there any chance the NBA could change the Orlando plan? Here's what Adam Silver had to say.
Never full steam ahead, no matter what. I think one thing we're learning about this virus is much is unpredictable. And I think we and our players together with their union, the Players Association, look at the data on a daily basis. And if there were something to change that was outside of the scope of what we're playing for, certainly we would revisit our plans. I'd also say, I mean, we're testing daily. We haven't put a precise number on it, but if we were to see a large number of cases and we were to see spread in our community, that would, of course, would be a cause for us to stop as well.
And again, we just talked to Malika Andrews, who is down in Orlando. She's at a hotel that she got at before she gets in the bubble. She goes there tomorrow, and she talked about the extensive testing that her and other support staff for the NBA are getting before they even enter the bubble. So there's a lot of testing that is going on before you even enter the bubble. And there has been a team that had to be down there early because to get out of Canada was the Toronto Raptors. Their head coach Nick Nurse and the team went to Fort Myers because they had to basically quarantine for 14 days coming out of Canada. And they said it was kind of like, you know, basketball camp with how they were getting their meals and practicing and such in Fort Myers before they head up to Orlando. So listen, they're the second seed right now.
Correct.
Behind Milwaukee. So Nick Nurse at his press conference talked about expectations for his team going to Orlando.
I expect, you know, to kind of come back into this to see, okay, what are we going to look like here coming back? But we've also got kind of a little cheat sheet to know there is a place we've been with this group, right? So I think that if it isn't all holding hands and skipping rope at the beginning, we're going to have to just stick with it and see if we can get back to a level. And again, I think there's another level this group can go.
So they're doing a little extra quarantining. They did it in Fort Myers.
Correct.
For a couple of weeks. And now they're hoping to be in Orlando for more than a few weeks.
Until
because
October.
Again, the last four teams will be there past 67 days. Everybody else will be gone by then. They would love to be one of the last teams. So they will be there a while. And there's so many hurdles to jump, as Malika again with us earlier said, and so many different ones that maybe you haven't even thought of yet until everybody gets there. And you wonder if one of the, because what do you try and do? You try and think of every single scenario out there,
right?
But something always pops up of like, oh yeah, didn't think of
didn't
that
quite
one.
Think that
you
one
hope
through.
That doesn't happen, but I mean, I almost think it's guaranteed to happen in some respect.
You know, it is remarkable too, because the job Nick Nurse has done as the Raptors head coach before the season came to the hard start on March 11th was really remarkable. The second seed in the league, despite losing Kawhi Leonard, and you can say, well, they still had everybody else. Yeah, but Kawhi was the reason that they won the championship. Don't get it twisted. And we heard from Fred VanVleet, one of their best players, yesterday, saying, hey, man, the timing of this thing sucks for a variety of reasons. So, you know, we've talked to Jeff Van Gundy and a couple of other coaches talking about the importance of keeping those players mentally sharp as they get set with this bubble. And I think that's going to be a big, big part of this. And, you know, Nick Nurse, we've had him on a bunch. His resume as a basketball coach is remarkable on a lot of levels, the vagabond life he's led. So if anybody is honestly prepared for, how do I deal with a bubble, it would be Nick Nurse and sort of the places he's had to go across the globe and all kinds of weird places in the UK that he has actually coached basketball teams. I think he might actually have a head up in all of this.
Yeah, and again, too, because we don't want to make it sound like this is going to be torturous staying
it's
in the bubble
different.
In Orlando. Our main thought is it's different. It's something that everybody is from inside sports to outside sports is going through things they're not used to. So this is not any kind of death sentence or any kind of prison or anything like that for the players. We understand that.
Yeah.
But it is one thing I'll say about athletes is being one for so many years, you are used to...
You're still an athlete, my friend.
Thank you. You are used to your schedule and what you normally do. You are in your pattern. You're used to your pattern, and they're going to be thrown off their pattern. And they'll do it. They'll all manage it somehow, yeah, some way. But I'm just saying everybody is used to that what their norm is, and we're not in the norm anymore. So he who adjusts best is going to be the best at this, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Just like we talked about with football and free agency and the offseason is how do teams all deal with it when we were talking about the draft. Oh, it's going to be so hard for some teams. It's like, you know what? Everybody's got to deal with it the same way. Yeah. Who deals with it best?
Right.
Who takes the problem and finds the best solution to come out of it ahead of everybody else?
100% correct, because they're all be dealing with the same variables or unknowns. It's how you handle it going forward. Speaking of how to handle it and speaking of things being different, it's going to be a very different year in college football, yeah, as well. And for more on that, we're delighted to be joined by our friend. You know him simply as...
Oh, God.
From the Paul Feinbaum Show. Paul, thanks for being with us this morning. First of all, before we dive into the mess that could be college football, and I say could for a reason, we just talked about it. Today is the start of the second half of the 2020 year, which has just been the year from hell on a variety of levels. Let's be honest about it. It peaked when Hall of Famer Patrick Mahomes won the Super Bowl. We get that. So if you needed a great halftime speech, Paul, to get you through the second half of what is probably going to be a pretty crappy next 6 months, who would you pick and why?
I'd probably pick Mike Golick's mom. She's one of my favorite people in the world. She knows how to stir things up better than anyone I've ever met.
Boy, you're right about that. She will stir things up.
I like that.
Make no
mistake.
And
by the way, I say that having been at the other end of her vitriol one time for criticizing you. And I said, you know what? I am a Golick family fan for the rest of my life after getting a tongue lashing from Christine Golick.
She will. She'll throw a few darts when she has to protect the family. That's Mama Bear right there.
That's hilarious.
No doubt about it. So, Paul, I mean, here we go. I mean, we're seeing. We saw in Arizona with the spike. We're seeing campuses that are either shutting down or some at Arizona, University of Arizona. They're saying they're not bringing students back. And there was one football player that said, well, why are we still on campus? So there's that question. There's, are they safer on campus rather than going back home somewhere else? I mean, where was your confidence level before this latest spike, and where is it now?
Yeah, not to sound like a lot of people, but if you go back to Memorial Day, I felt great. I may have even expressed that to you guys at some point. Yeah. Not anymore. I think the only people who are selling delusion and hope right now are folks who run college football. They're talking about on-time beginnings and full stadiums, and they're all full of crap. it's time to start speaking realistically. I mean, I heard Adam Silver the other day say, yeah, we might have to shut things down. I mean, that you have to be realistic. And I think for too long, college executives have been selling hope, the push to get players back on campus, the push to do all of these things, which is fine. None of us are against college football. We're all huge fans. But it's reality time now. It's July 1st. And anyone who believes that the college football season is in good shape is wrong. I don't even know what the best case scenario I could give you right now is. I do believe that if there is a season, it won't start on time. And I'm beginning to seriously question whether there will be a season or not.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. As Golic and Wingo is brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Straight Talk Wireless runs on the same networks for up to 50% less. Get the unlimited plan with up to 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G for just $45 a month. No contract. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Compromise might be the way we find a way to do this, Paul. We've heard the Ivy Leagues talk about two separate scenarios, either A, starting later and then just playing a 7-game in-conference schedule, or maybe pushing it to April. And we get it. The Ivy League is different because everyone is close to each other. The longest ride we checked was Penn and Philadelphia to Dartmouth and Hanover, New Hampshire, which is about a 6-hour ride. The money-making conferences, we know who they are, the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12, the Big 10, the Pac-12, those big-time conferences, they don't have that luxury. So if they're going to play, they're going to be exposing themselves in ways that other sports – like the Ivy League or the bubbles that are going to be in the NBA and the NHL aren't. So, What's the most realistic outcome in your mind at this point for getting the season to start, let alone finish?
I think the most realistic, Trey, is getting through the next 3 to 4 weeks, which I think will be among the most perilous few weeks in college football history, because decisions have to be made now. You just can't keep saying we have time is on our side. Time is no longer on their side. That was great on Easter and Memorial Day, but that ship has long ago passed. So I think what they have to watch the spikes around the country, and we all know where they are. Outside of California and Arizona, most of them are in the deep South, the states that return to some normalcy first and aggressively. And if these numbers go the way that Dr. Fauci said they would yesterday, I think it means that college football will have to continue to delay. And they've delayed yet, but there was a report out yesterday that the SEC is pushing back media days. Well, I mean, what else can you do? Media days is supposed to be going on 2 weeks from now. Are you going to get Nick Saban up there and say, coach, what's going on? And he'll say, I don't know what's going on. Nobody's told me. You can't let that happen. So I think they have a very narrow window to get. They could possibly delay the season 2 weeks and still maybe get it all in. But then you start crunching into December, and I'm speaking optimistically here. The bowl schedule becomes a disaster, which, you know, let's be honest, it probably is going to be a disaster anyway this year, because, you know, who's going to some of these games, if anyone. So I think that's their best bet. On top of that, this is not the NBA or the NFL where you can live without you can do it any way you want. I mean, at some point, a president's going to have to make a decision. Are we letting 30 or in Ohio State's case, 50,000 people back on campus? And I think that's a problematic call right there. So, I mean, I think it all starts happening here in the next couple of weeks. I know I've given you a long answer, but I think it points toward at best a late start, and at worst tabling it to maybe going to spring, which I don't see very likely. The best players are not going to compete. Spring football in college football would be tantamount to the XFL.
Paul, we always hear that the athlete's health comes first, and we so want to believe that, but we also know what the lure of money is. So how concerned are you that lure of the money to be made by having a season will unfortunately overtake what should be the primary concern?
Mike, we're going to see in the next couple of weeks, and it's easy for me to say that people in college athletics only care about money, but yeah, that's been proven. I don't what they do over
that's called history, Paul.
Yeah, exactly. So what they do now is really going to define the future, and I think a great deal is at stake. I think if they're cavalier and simply say we're too big to fail, they could do more damage than just trying to salvage the season. I saw the player at Arizona tweeted something out overnight about nobody caring about us. I think you're going to hear a lot more of that. I've spoken to parents of players who are very concerned about what's happening, even during these voluntary workouts. And we are now, we're still 2 weeks away from the beginning of controlled workouts. College football has 3 weeks of non-contact, and then they have 3 weeks of contact. But that's around the corner, and college football coaches are like every other set of coaches. They're aggressive, and they're not used to being told what they can't do. They usually dictate, and I think they'll have a very difficult time. And based on what I've seen so far in the first 3 weeks of voluntary workouts, I think they're doing a lousy job.
Well, okay. Is there anything to the scenario where that Arizona player tweeted out, as Paul Feinbaum was with us, that they're maybe safer on that campus in that scenario because there's a situation where they are not in a bubble per se, but in their much more restricted environment?
Well, I would agree with that on one. I mean, certainly and you know, not to disparage anyone. I mean, where I came from, I would have been better off on a college campus in that controlled environment than being home with a single mom, like a lot of other people in this country. So yeah, they're better on that campus, but they don't stay on the campus all day. And, you know, some of the stories that we're all hearing about are downright scary. We're talking about these corona parties. Let's get it and get it out of the way, as if any person who makes that claim has an understanding of the science of this virus, which, by the way, the scientists don't even have an understanding of the science of the virus. How is a college student going to be able to figure it out?
Just follow the Twitter eggs. I mean, they know everything. They've got it all figured out.
So, Paul, there have been people going on the show with Mari and Mel. Dari and Mel. I'm combining them. Dari and Mel.
That's okay.
And they've been doing
Kainoa.
They've been doing percentages of season starting, season finishing. Buster Olney for baseball said a 5% chance the season starts, 0% of finishes. Our Malika Andrews, our NBA reporter, she is down in Orlando, going to be in that bubble. She said 98% the NBA restarts, 60% chance it finishes. What are your percentages that the college football season starts and then the college football season actually finishes?
Yeah, I think for the first time we're probably at about 50% to start the season on time. And, you know, finishing it is I think it goes below that. But these are numbers that were a month ago. I thought it was 100%. I mean, that's how confident I was. So these numbers are slipping. And I think if I happen to be with you in a week or two, the numbers are going to go down. I mean, right now it's a little hard to predict what's ahead, but I just want to hear an honest portrayal from someone in intercollegiate athletics. And I have yet to hear that in the 3 months that we've been having this conversation.
Yeah. Good luck to that. Yeah. We all hope to hear that someday. Yeah.
Listen, yeah. Mate, all, you know, years from now, I'll look back and think the voice of Lincoln Riley was a voice of reason here. He was the one that kept saying the Oklahoma City.
You're right. He's the only one who has raised any question. Everyone else has just ignored it. And I mean, I had somebody before I go, I know you got to run, you know, the other day saying we are going to have football. I mean, That's not the attitude you're taking. We're not going to war here. We're trying to figure out a disease that one of these days, unfortunately, is going to affect someone younger than 80 years old. I know I say that facetiously, right. But yeah, sure. I just hope that these young people who think they know what they're doing don't get in something that they can't reverse.
That's exactly right, yep. Because there's still a lot we don't know as opposed to what we know. Paul, as always, appreciate your time. Appreciate your perspective, my friend.
Guys, always a pleasure. Be well.
Thanks, Paul.
You too.
Yeah, so again, we're looking for who do you want to give the half-year, halftime speech?
Maximus.
I'm going, you went with your road dog.
Herm.
I'm going with a guy I've gotten to know over the years, and his words, you know, he's like the old E.F. Hutton commercial.
Sure.
When they speak, you listen. That's Bill Curry.
Absolutely.
You know, to kind of lead us, whether it's sports or outside, just kind of hear his calming voice and the way he explains things.
It is interesting, though, that we both chose someone who we worked with
here
that just had such an impact on us in the way they live their lives, which I thought was very
Which is
very
great
cool.
Because, you know, Bill is going around. He talks to a lot of different people and companies and such that has an impact on people. And Herm certainly doing it with the youth now of kids, you know, 18-year-olds coming in to Arizona State and helping them mold their lives.
By the way, Herm, I don't know if you saw him recently. He was on, I think it was the NFL Network, on a panel discussion. Hadn't had a haircut in a while. Herm was getting close to 1974, Herm.
Wow.
I mean, it was impressive. Road Dogg still could bring the hair game in a very, very strong way. So tweet us at Golic and Wingo. Someone to give you the halftime speech that you need to turn around a lousy 2020. Yep. Who would it be and why? At Golic and Wingo. Coming up, we know this. We know this. The top two are set. We're going to talk about them anyway. But how about the top three-ish teams of the third best team in the AFC? Oh, dear Lord, this took a crazy turn. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2.
Trey, the power rankings. It's Trey Wingo's power rankings.
Yeah, I like football. I like football season and all the things that go with it.
Trey's top three, or something like that.
The most ridiculous title of all time.
I am sweaty.
Well, These took a dark turn. I'm not going to lie to you. Golic and Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We celebrated Monday, this past Monday, like, Mike, that we haven't in a long time because it was a major sports story that was about sports. And it was fun and refreshing on so many levels. Cam Newton signing with the Patriots. So we've been doing these top three rankings on Wednesdays all offseason in the NFL, getting ready for the start of the regular season. We hope and pray, we hope and pray, we hope and pray, we hope and pray. And they've been mostly divisional. And then we decided, okay, well, let's rank the top three teams in the AFC East. Or maybe we rank the top three quarterbacks-ish in the AFC. But then you started the AFC East. But then you started to see all these projections of where the Patriots are in terms of their playoff possibilities.
Right.
When they go with Cam Newton, presumably, if it's not Jared Stidham.
Sort of the title change again on what we're ranking?
We did, kind of. What we're doing now is we're ranking the top three-ish teams behind the top two teams in the AFC.
Wait a minute. This is Trey Wingo's top three-ish in the AFC after the top two.
Yes, and we're putting the top two in there, but we're starting at one or two just so people can say, well, what if, because you know, if we don't mention these two teams,
right.
You didn't say these guys.
Okay, so the top three after Kansas City and Baltimore.
Yeah, so we're going to start at number one. Just say, here we go, number one.
Good play. Number one.
Kansas City Chiefs.
Okay.
Super Bowl champs, Kansas City Chiefs.
Number two.
Number two, play it.
Number two.
Baltimore Ravens. All right, the disclaimers are out there.
It's been recorded.
It's been recorded, yes. In the annals of radio history. We mentioned those top two teams.
So now Trey Wingo's top three-ish from three on.
Yes. Here we go.
Number three.
Are you starting at the back or the front now?
We're going the best one.
The best one. Yeah. So the true number three.
This
here
is the true number
mind.
Three.
Okay.
Yes, the true number three as we go. Number okay. three. Again, play it.
Number three.
My headphones have gone out, so we'll figure this out.
All right.
It would be the New England Patriots.
Wow.
I have been one of those guys that is a firm believer in Bill Belichick, and the over-under for them at 8.5 wins I thought was ridiculous.
Even without Cam. We both agreed on that.
Yes. Thought they were going to get a winning record no matter what. Now you put Cam Newton in there. Our Football Power Index actually has them at number three. With a 63.5% chance to make the playoffs, the Chiefs were number one at 93. The Ravens were number two at 90.7, almost 91.
I'll see what the rest of your order is, but I think I may be agreeing with it. So let's go again. Number three.
Number three A.
Let's go to number three on the list, okay?
Number three A. Sorry, Buffalo. It's the Buffalo Bills.
Wow.
Listen,
that's actually higher than I thought you were going to put them.
Yeah, the FPI. I'm for whatever reason, for the beginning of this, I'm simpatico with the FPI, a Football Power Index. According to the Football Power Index, they have the Bills as the fourth best team to make the playoffs at 59.7. I do believe Buffalo has a chance to win the wild card again, but I still think I'm defaulting to Bill Belichick being Bill Belichick until proven otherwise.
For them to be fourth, they got to be a wild card, right? They got to be
in
the playoffs.
Correct.
Right. So you think that you don't think they'll win the division, but you think they'll win the and right now I think the odds are even. Before Cam, Buffalo was favored to win the division. Now it's even.
By the slightest of margin, the Patriots are still ahead.
Okay.
But very close. All right, we continue.
Number three on the list, stay with me.
This would be 3B.
Mm-hmm.
It would be the Tennessee Titans.
Wow, I was wondering where you'd go with them as opposed to the Colts and Houston.
Hear me out. Listen, Bill Belichick, the coach, has always found a way to do better than Bill O'Brien, the coach.
Right,
has always found a way to do better than Bill O'Brien, the general manager.
Without question.
And Bill O'Brien, the general manager, has handed Bill O'Brien, the coach, a massive L in getting rid of DeAndre Hopkins. So that's why I feel not so strong about them. The Titans, we've seen it. Vrabel is there. Ryan Tannehill is in the system. There's not a lot of moving parts here. I'm not sure Tannehill can be as good this regular season as he was last year. I'm not sure he's going to have to be. I do think that the Titans have a plan in place. Derrick Henry is still there, whether he gets the contract, which is coming up soon.
Did lose their right tackle in Conklin. They lost a little bit on defense.
A little bit. I still like the system and the program that Vrabel has in place. I'm still believing in Tennessee. I'm just not believing in Ryan Tannehill as much, but I don't think the drop-off is going to be severe to knock them out of the postseason.
Okay.
We move on.
Let's go to number three on the list, okay?
Here's where it gets crazy. Here's where it gets crazy. I'm putting the Colts next at 3.
Wow, I know a lot of fans in Pennsylvania somewhere are really mad at you right now.
Get into that. We'll get into that in a minute. I just... The coaching staff that they have in Indy is very comfortable with Phillip Rivers. Even though he's coming over to a new system, I understand that. There's a lot of familiarity there. I loved their draft. Loved it. Getting Pittman, the wide receiver, and Taylor, the running back. And they did get Buckner in the offseason from the San Francisco 49ers. Yep. I think they've addressed a lot of needs. So I have the Tennessee Titans at 3B.
Yeah, right now I would switch the Colts in Tennessee.
And I can understand that. Yeah, I can understand that. I'm just a little bit of that coming over in a limited offseason. I have some familiar with.
Understood.
Now, I have several more teams. So you want to take a break now and go? Because I think the next few teams, people are going to freak out.
You have several more teams at number 3.
Yes.
Okay, I got to wait for this.
Content. Evan, are we good with that? Yeah, with that?
We're good with that. Wow.
All right, when we come back, we will continue my top 3-ish teams, which may reach epic proportions.
Wow.
We'll get to all of that. All right, Golic and Wingo here with you, so forgive us. We're doing the thing today, which is called summer content and summer COVID content, which makes all the sense in the world until it doesn't.
So we're making Trey Does His List every Wednesday, and this list is, since Cam Newton signed with the Patriots, their odds have switched around, so we're looking at the best teams in the AFC. But since the two at the top are pretty much set, we're doing Trey's top 3 in the AFC after the first two.
Yeah.
And the first two, we said this publicly, so we're on tape and saying it, so we don't feel
so
like
you didn't talk about these two teams.
Kansas City at number 1, Baltimore at number 2. And then for the third best team in the AFC, that's Trey's list. And right now we have 4 teams listed. He has in order what he thinks is going to be number 3, the Patriots at 3, Buffalo at 3A, Tennessee at 3B, the Colts at 3C, and shockingly enough, he has more. So let's continue.
Number 3.
All right, we're down to technically 3D.
3D.
3D here. And that would be the team that you had mentioned a question about at the confluence of the Ohio, the Allegheny, and the Monongahela Rivers. In Western Pennsylvania, your Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, so the Steelers there again getting Ben back. And I know that there's been questions, what's the future of James Conner, Juju Smith-Schuster at wide receiver as well.
Look, I think there are legitimate questions.
Yeah, yeah.
For once, the Steelers' defense seems like it's good.
It does, in the offense there are some question marks.
Right.
You had your left guard in Ramon Foster, he retired.
Yep.
So that line changes a little bit. Ben coming back from elbow surgery. So I don't really have a problem with this list right now.
Except for the Colts and the Texans?
Colts and Texans. Now, I may even put the Colts up ahead of Buffalo. I'm not sure yet. I kind of like where Buffalo is. You have New England being 3, Buffalo next, Tennessee, Colts, and Pittsburgh. So that's it. We're done?
No, we have more. But real quickly on Pittsburgh. Ben's coming back almost 40, from the elbow on his throwing arm. We still don't know if Juju's a legitimate number one wide receiver.
Understood. There are questions.
Although I will say, this is where I went off the rails with FPI. FPI had them at 5, which would have been 3B at 57%. FPI had them both ahead of both the Colts and the Titans.
Titans.
So I went a little different there. But wait, I'm not done. I've got more.
Number 3.
Now, this one is interesting.
I was going to say, where are we going here?
I have at 3E the Texans.
Okay.
And here's why. They always seem to find a way to find 9-7 and make the playoffs. And again, I do believe Bill O'Brien, the GM, is really doing Bill O'Brien, the head coach, a massive disservice here. But I can't put it past the realm of possibility that somehow, some way, the Texans will find a way to scrape just enough wins to host a wild card playoff game, which you'll see on ESPN and ABC.
There you go.
I mean, it just feels like that's an inevitability. There are very few certainties in life. The Texans finding a way to play on wild card weekend seems to be one of them.
It really does. But, man, you just wonder, when does that run out?
Yeah.
Because we both think Tennessee is going to be good.
Yeah.
We both think the Colts got better
yep.
from their quarterback to the running game to the interior of that defensive line.
Yep.
And Houston lost arguably the best wide receiver in the league.
Correct.
So DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller were great when they're together, but correct. We saw when only one's on and the other, and usually it was Will Fuller who was off and DeAndre Hopkins on. Now Will, you know, it doesn't have DeAndre there. So I think there are legitimate question marks there without a doubt.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't have a problem with – I would put all of them after the other teams you had. For the number three slot, you have six teams, Stunner. I would.
I'm not done.
What?
I'm not done. One more. Hit it one more time.
Hell no.
What the hell?
Number three.
I'm trying to decide who you're going to.
Take some shots here. I'm really curious. Because
you're not going to say Miami, are you?
No, I wanted to, but I just couldn't. I just couldn't.
Well, then we're going to the West.
Yep.
It's either Denver, the Raiders, or the Chargers.
Where are you going? Where do you think I went? By the way, a dangerous game for you to decide where my brain goes. Let's be clear about that.
Denver.
Yes! Yeah. The Denver Broncos. I am all in on the Denver Broncos for being in contention for a wild card.
Because you're all in on the Denver Broncos being the seventh best third team in the AFC.
Possibly. Possibly. because, listen, we all know the Chiefs, barring catastrophic things, are going to win that division.
Yes.
I have questions about the Raiders draft class. I have questions about the Raiders quarterback. You're looking at all in on Drew Lock guy right here.
Wow.
I am
okay.
All in okay. on Drew Lock. And then they get Jerry Jeudy. They get Melvin Gordon. Their defense, I think, is they lose Strap Harris. I understand that. But they still have Bradley Chubb and Von Miller. And I thought their draft was one of the more underrated drafts of the entire 32 teams when we had that incredible virtual draft that weekend.
Drew Lock played five games, you know, and you're all in on Drew Lock.
I liked what I saw.
Okay. That's fine.
That's the best way to describe it.
So he played five games, completed 64% of his passes, seven touchdowns, three interceptions, and then we know at some point, of course, young quarterbacks get figured out.
Yeah, they also got K.J. Hamler, the wide receiver out of Penn State, who has been described as having DeSean Jackson-type qualities. He's a small guy but has big bursts. So you can get Jerry Jeudy and you can get K.J. Hamler in the same draft. They get Melvin Gordon coming over there. They've got Philip Lindsay. They've got Cortland Sutton. They have Noah Fant, the tight end.
Right.
They got Albert O., the tight end out of Missouri, whom Drew Lock played with in college,
right.
who was an athletic freak. Like, the things he put on at the combine, the last guy to do something that size was ridiculous. I just think there's a lot of interesting parts.
I am interested in it, because we talk about a lot of the young quarterbacks going into their second or third year, and Drew Lock doesn't get brought up a lot.
Yeah.
Because, again, remember for those that don't, it was Joe Flacco who started the season out in Denver, who is now with the Jets
right.
and doesn't think he'll be ready.
Correct.
For the start of the
season.
Signed
before Cam, by the way.
Neck surgery. There isn't a talk about Drew Lock, but you have heard people say they do like Drew. There's a very, very small sample size. He wasn't one of those rookies that went out there and started, you know, the entire season.
Correct.
And got a lot of time. He started five games. So still, I think a lot of – I would put the letter I as an incomplete next to him, obviously, right now.
I would put the I for intrigued, put it that way. Let me put it this way. That's a better way. I can't say I'm all in. That's fair.
Right.
I am very intrigued by the way I saw Drew Lock play. And clearly, the message – through the AFC West is what we saw with the Broncos and also what we saw with the Raiders. We're not going to stop Patrick Mahomes. We need to try and keep pace and score with him, with the way they've drafted around him. And I just think they've done a really nice job. You know, John Elway, who, by the way, just turned 60 a few days ago. Happy birthday, John. Took a lot of criticism and has rightfully so taken a lot of criticism for not finding a way outside of Peyton Manning to get the quarterback there. I think they got the quarterback in last year's draft in the second round of Drew Lock, and I like the things they're building around him. Now, Philip Lindsay fell into them because they didn't draft him, even though he's down the road in Boulder, but he had a really good rookie year. I just think Denver is a really interesting option. Really, really interesting.
So to recap, Trey's top three, number
ish.
Three
yeah.
in the AFC.
Yeah.
We have winning, so because I'm going to take this in a little different direction, we have the top Kansas City, next Baltimore, and then number three, actual number three, you have New England.
Yep.
And falling in line, who could vie for number three? Buffalo, Tennessee, the Colts, Pittsburgh, Houston, and Denver. So basically, so I have this correct, you basically, by your rankings, have win in the division, Kansas City winning the division,
yeah.
Baltimore winning the division, New England winning the division, and Tennessee winning the division.
Yeah.
So along those lines, because you have Buffalo after New England, you have Buffalo being a wild card, and you have the Colts after Tennessee, so do you have the Colts being a wild card.
Potentially.
And then there's an extra wild card, another wild card. So who out of there, Pittsburgh, Houston, or Denver? I'm just following by your rankings. You have Pittsburgh next, but if you took those last three teams, Pittsburgh, Houston, and Denver, of who might be that third?
Honestly, I might bet on Denver. It's not a simple thing to come back from that elbow injury.
I'm not going
to
lie. I'm not a list guy. Yeah. I had fun with this list.
Yes! More fun continues. Golic and Wingo, stay with us.